opinion.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
As you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
I'm Jimmy Maliaha.
And I'm Simon Grant.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Insider Exchange. And before we get this episode underway, I must start this episode, unfortunately, with an apology. We owe everybody our deepest apologies. Myself and Simon went missing for a week and everybody freaked out. Our DMs were flooded. Everybody wanted to know where we went. We'll get into that in a second. We do apologize for not explaining ourselves. In future, we will make sure we don't leave you abandoned. But that being said, we're going to be going straight into market matters this week because there is just so much to cover. We're going to be looking at the latest Truth Social post from Donald J. Trump. We're going to be taking a look at the month of January in terms of trading and everything that happened there. Gold prices reaching new highs. We're going to be looking at the NFP numbers expected this week. We're going to be looking at the interest rate decision from last week. And helping us to take a look at all of these market matters in studio, joining us is Manager for Trading Services and good friend of ours, Sean Dendere, because Trive has graciously agreed to be our partner on this particular episode. We thank them for all the work that they continue to do with us. And Sean, welcome back. It's nice to have you back in studio. I think this is the first time we've had you back for this year. How was your break?
I mean, not really a break. I worked majority of December, but actually ended up going to Zim as well for a little bit because I'm originally from Zim, for those that don't know. So that was really, really cool. But back in the grind.
Someone had to work.
That's it. Yeah. Someone had to do it. The grind never stops. And apparently we had to tell people last week that we weren't going to be those people. Sai was in Cape Town. I was globetrotting in Cyprus and Dubai. Sai, how was Cape Town?
I love Cape Town. Just love it. It's got beach. You know what I didn't see for 12 days? Pothole.
Oh, promise. Really?
I didn't see one either.
Swear.
I won't lie. I didn't see one either. I did see an 8-lane highway in Dubai with a bunch of supercars, which is another conversation for another day.
Lovely. My city, although the ticketing system is stuck in, but the mayor replied to me and explained why it's broken until June of next year. And love Cape Town. Went to see some live music. Offspring. Yo.
Oh, what it's like to be a celebrity. Oh, what it's like to. The mayor replied to me.
Exactly. He's like, okay, we'll sort this off.
So for the record, the mayor of Cape Town follows me on the Twitter. He's now probably my most famous follower. It used to be Tito Mboweni.
I think you are my most famous follower.
Oh, good. Okay, that's awkward.
But yeah, I mean, we disappear for 1 week. We take a break, a little bit of a... It wasn't even a real break, guys. We leave for 1 week and you guys bring back load shedding.
Yeah, there was...
What that. Happened?
No, guys, no. Let's
what
not
happened?
Blame them. Let's not blame them. Let's not blame the people. Because it was one day. Just, you know, to remind us
just
that
a bit
it's
of
possible.
Trauma.
Like, it's possible, but we're sorting it out.
Yeah, that was, I mean, when I saw that notification come through, I was like, this can't possibly, I mean, we supposedly had this problem fixed, and you'd think that would be the case, but clearly that, coupled with the latest statements by one POTUS, or the 47th President of the United States, have sent the RAND tumbling this morning because that Truth Social post, eh?
Although the RAND is 15 cents better than its worst. So it went out to 1905 and I woke up at like 4:30 and now we're at 1890.
We were at 1850 before the weekend.
Okay.
No, because let's not look at it in isolation, right? The dollar has been on an interesting rally. Because you were speaking about the gold price earlier, you touched on it. What I find very interesting is that the dollar is strengthening while gold is also strengthening. So it's like, what's actually happening in the market? Because obviously normally they have that inverse relationship. And it's like, well, as a trader, like, what direction am I taking? Quite a confusing
scenario. I mean, gold closed all-time highs last week.
Yeah.
And the DXY, which is the dollar index, is sort of back at, and I'm going to have to zoom out a lot here, sort of, it was, 2022 levels. But it is, I mean, to your point, it's like, this is weird. But in one sense, it's the fear, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the gold story is. And then the dollar is like, well, if they're going to be tariffing the heck out of everyone.
Yeah, I think that decoupling is largely driven by what's happening now politically. Because in the past, we could argue things like the stimulus package that went through for the US and all of that. But now you're seeing a very clear kind of movement from the things that the president is saying. I mean, the fact that you come into office, you sign a bunch of executive orders undoing your predecessor's work and then saying we're going to do this and impose tariffs on everybody. Canada's freaking out. Mexico's freaking out. I think the stance that Donald Trump is taking right now in the markets is something that's going to be one very clear message is volatility galore.
Like,
we're just, it's going to be a rough 4 years if you're not prepared, right? So, and for me, what the scariest part is, you can go to sleep one day, nothing has happened. He takes to Truth Social, he puts out a post about South Africa's expropriation bill, which has nothing to do with Donald, literally. Is unrelated to America. He's got no interest in putting this out. You can literally see from that post that this is him saying, I will stoke any and all fires that I deem necessary and we'll see what happens. And that's scary. I mean, I thought the first run of the president, like the first term, was wild. This is, he's trying to outdo himself.
No, but don't you think that it's a Hail Mary? He knows this technically his last term.
Correct.
He's going to do whatever he wants, whatever he thinks, and then he's just going to close the door and walk out.
But that's the scary part. That's what I'm saying is imagine how much chaos someone can cause when they have political will. Mm. Imagine the chaos that can be caused by the president of supposedly the largest economy on the face of the earth.
And he's unchecked.
Sorry, Simon, but he's unchecked.
And that's just it. So we always thought that there were guardrails, and the guardrails, and look, there will be court cases galore. Turns out the guardrails were mostly norms. In other words, you don't do that because it's not done.
Mm.
Well, it turns out, and I mean, even the Canada, Texas, Mexico, because of course there's the new NAFTA, and I forget what it's called. And there is, so you can't do tariffs against each other, except there's a carve out if there's a crisis. And he's got the crisis with Canada as illegal immigrants and fentanyl. Mm. They caught 24 pounds of fentanyl on that border last year. 24 pounds. But it's a carve out. And yes, so you can take it to the WTO, World Trade Organization, and all of that, and fight your way through, and Trump will be out of office before it's resolved.
The WTO, is that the organization he's still a part of? Or is that the organization? No, the WHO is the one that pulled out of.
He left the Paris Agreement. So that's where, yeah.
But those kinds of actions, making it very clear that he as the president, whether it's America's stance or not, but he as the president does not care about what has been the historical relationship between a nation and anyone else.
Americans, because I don't see... At times, tough decisions have been made by leaders, and you know, I'm thinking Churchill in World War II and others. But they were, you could kind of see what the long-term benefit ultimately was. Yeah, I don't see how this benefits, except unless he really wants to annex Canada as the 51st state. But that is not going to happen unless literally he invades. I mean,
since anyway.
Armed forces. I mean, what is... I mean, I don't see an end game here. I don't see what, you know, in the first term, he did crazy stuff, but you could see an end game. You could disagree with it. You could think he was going about it the wrong way, but you could see a thread kind of maybe bit. Now, all I see is.
I think the mask of make America great again is kind of what's been put forward, is to say America first and everyone else in the world second kind of thing, right? Which is all good and well to want to pursue that. But surely there's going to come a point in life where other leaders of other countries are going to say, listen, we're not going to do what you want us to do. We don't belong to you. We're each our own sovereign states. We each have our own political agendas. I think it's almost as if America and Donald Trump are trying to not only weaponize the dollar, but weaponize the American economy. Like in South Africa's case, oh no, we're going to suspend all of the aid that we send to you. You're weaponizing America's position to say, you will now have to say yes to us or else we'll take this away. And it's going to take some serious leadership from a country like South Africa or other countries to stand up and say, well, then take the trade away. And that takes away effectively the power that the US has in that conversation.
Yeah.
But do we have the political will to do so?
I wanted to just touch on that quickly, is that this might sound controversial. There is, in my opinion, right, it's an opportunity for the rest of the world, right, to try find a way to be less reliant
On America. US, absolutely.
Clearly, I mean, you got a new president in, and we can see that.
And he's not interested in relations.
No care of relations. No relations. Relations with him and his boys, Elon and the boys, those are the relations that are important, right? But for us, it's like, okay, cool. You're taking out the funding away. You are putting tariffs on your neighboring countries, which actually Mexico and Canada are, the United States' biggest trade partners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people don't, I mean, I don't know if he knows that or he's read that somewhere. but it is an opportunity. It's going to be tough. And like you said, it does require a lot of political will, but also requires the will of the people, like us on the ground, you know, coming up with new ideas, implementing new things to ensure that our economies are actually being stimulated independently and obviously with all the other trade partners that we have that we're actually happy with.
I think you're right. And, you know, let's take it to USAID, which is, I mean, and disclosure, my sister has at times done contracts work with involved in USAID, mostly in the HIV AIDS space. And yeah, we are very reliable on it. Our HIV program in South Africa is I think it's 17% of their funding. It comes from the US. Being less reliable on the US is undoubtedly a good thing for a couple of reasons. One, because one day the US will fade. Two, because one day the US will be ruled, happening already, megalomaniac in charge. but, you know, it's business 101, right? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. The world has largely put their eggs in an American basket.
Mm.
And the world is suddenly realizing, well, that's been great for, I don't know, 50, however many hundred years, not so great now. Change, however, is not fun. It's going to be painful in the process. But there is a place where we come out to the other point, and I agree with you 100%, less reliant on America, and that's not a bad thing for America or the rest of the world. It's just going to be
tough, very tough. It's going to be really tough.
So this conversation brings me to the next one.
Uh-huh.
The gold price that you mentioned hitting all-time highs last week.
Mm.
Is that the natural response to say, yes, all of this is happening, and maybe we didn't flock to gold as a safe haven in the past, but now with the increased weaponization of the dollar, maybe we should be going back to gold. Because over the last couple of, I'd say 18 months perhaps, you and I have been watching the markets, Si and I have been talking about it as well. You've seen that gold, the dollar has been the safe haven kind of alternative, purely because of the return you get on the dollar. Now, is it that Donald Trump is putting that return at risk? Is it that markets are saying, this might not be worth it?
Interesting. Interesting question. I don't know. I think as human beings, we always go back to default, right? And if we
go
look
back
at
to
gold,
what we know kind of thing.
Exactly. So if we go historically, gold was the original safe haven. Mm. And in times of high volatility and massive uncertainty, that can just be tweeted, right? I think gold is going to be the safe haven, and it's going to lead to, sorry to interject, but to lead to us dumping the dollar, because obviously, like you said, it's being weaponized. So let me go to something that's not being...
You can't weaponize something you can't have, you don't have absolute control over,
exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think so. Because, you know, it's not crypto, right? Bitcoin's down 10% since the tariffs. Although 10-year US Treasuries, 4.55% is not shabby. I might take my ZAR, turn it into RANDs, get some RAND weakness, some 4.5%. I just can't find any way to cleanly buy it. But it ultimately comes back to... Now, what we see in crises, and we saw it in 08, 09, we saw it in the pandemic sell-off, when stuff really hits the fan, everything is correlated one. I mean, it all just goes down. But over time, I mean, look what gold has done. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Suddenly it's like, gold, hey?
Interesting.
Speaking of markets correlating in one direction, right? Looking at what's happened in the past, I mean, the last 4 years haven't been easy on markets. And we finally get to a point where markets are saying, there's optimism. We're going to start to move up. We're going to start to move in the right direction. And Trump tries to, he is now the spanner in the works, so to speak. Do we then see markets like gold and other commodities just kind of doing their own thing and picking up their own steam? I'm asking this because I had a look at the PGM price on Friday when we closed out the month. Platinum for the entire month of January didn't even get to $1,000. And then suddenly we were above $1,000 closing out the month in positive territory. Is the market or the rest of the landscape just saying, we're going to keep trucking on? We understand that this level of crazy is just something we have to contend with, and we're taking it in our stride.
I think so. I mean, surely that's how we need to respond. I mean, I'm looking at our market today. So here's a fun fact. Over 1 year, gold's up 37%, NASDAQ S&P 23 XDIV. Over 3 year, gold's 56, and the other two, NASDAQ 49 and 37 to S&P. So gold's doing what it says on the sticker already. I mean, we'll see how the US opens, but I mean, our market's down 1.4. That's nasty. Make no mistake about it. Not the end of the world. The Rand's, okay, it's lost some sense as we've been talking. 1897 as we talk. You know, this isn't a collapse. And we're just going to have to, as you say, kind of learn that this is the normal until 20 Jan 2029.
That sounds so far away.
There's a Twitter account you can follow which gives you in days, hours, minutes, and seconds how much longer Trump is in power.
I would lose my mind.
I blocked it.
I couldn't. I would lose my mind. Before we wrap up the segment, I want to take a look at some US news that's, I don't even know if it's going to be relevant to us. We've got NFP data coming out this week. We've put some emphasis on US data in the past and everything. I think that it's now safe to say that might just all go out the window at this point.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the volatility that NFP tends to create for the market is already in the market as we speak, now in this moment. Like Simon mentioned, let's see what's going to happen when the U.S. market opens. I think it's going to open in the red, in my opinion. I think most markets are going to be red for a while. Hopefully they turn around. But for as long as, you know, the president, Trump specifically, carries on his, let's call it, for the lack of a better term, tirade. And NFP is literally a small thing to consider. It's just a piece of data, which, once again, is, yes, it affects global markets, but it's just a number that is significant to the American economy. So let's not focus on that. Let's focus on the Rand losing sense while we're talking.
But I like your logic there. And I got two things I would put to it. One is that when we start focusing on NFP again, now we've moved on from Trump. If NFP comes on Thursday and we're like, well, no, there's this other chaos and we ignore it. When we start looking at economic data again, instead of tweets and truths or whatever.
Truth social, I think it's called.
Yeah. Then we know we've moved on. Also, the second order effects of this are, I mean, for example, the 10% tariff on gas might add, I think some economists were saying 20 cents to a gallon of gas. I mean, that's not going to change the world in Canada. These are longer term impacts that are going to play out in the weeks, months, you know, much longer. Inflation, you know, is inflation going back to 3.5% or 4%? I don't know, but certainly not in February or March or April. It's going to be in August or September. So I think at some point, I don't know how long, we're going to start sort of ignoring the fiery orange one and the shouty tweets. And I think the trigger is when we start actually, hey, data point, and that becomes the story again. I don't know if it's this week or next month, but
unknown.
But I like that logic. That's, we can almost into that.
Everything's unknown, everything's uncertain. One thing that is very, very clear is that the orange Mussolini is very much in charge, and we're going to leave market matters on that note. Thanks so much, Sean, for joining us.
Thank you.
We look forward to having you around. We're going to dive into our deep dive next. We're going to dive into our investor insights later in the show. They're going to be put out in the week. Remember, folks, like, subscribe, follow. We're live streaming every Monday, so if you've missed this live stream, it will be on our YouTube channel under the live tab. But until next time, that's been Market Matters. And we move on to our deep dive. This week, we are taking a look at the world of contactless and cashless transactions, something producers absolutely love. I know some members of our production team don't believe in carrying cash. And recently, myself and Simon had very interesting experiences about the contactless world from our travels. We're going to get into that, and we're going to see what that means for the future of how we interact and how we work with the businesses that we work with. I remember seeing something, when was it? A couple of weeks ago, that said that South Africa wanted to push more towards a digital economy, and we're seeing more of a cashless, countries are dumping cash in favor of alternative kinds of methods of payments and things. And I didn't realize how big it was until this past week. I mean, you had your experience with Cape Town and the concert. What was that like going through? I mean, you can remember a time where everything was cash, right?
I remember getting on buses and having to hand over money and getting a little ticket. So actually, it's a good point, because I catch the Gautrain from Rosebank, tap, tap, credit card on my phone, zip, zip, nice and simple. And then, of course, you Uber, and there's zero involvement of cash there. The concert was cashless as well. Worked an absolute treat, no problem there at all. And then you get on the MyCity bus, and you got to go get a card. You got to load the card. You got to go to a certain place or a certain place, and the places aren't very frequent. And then you can't, like, you tap that card, but you've got no, like, it's not connected to an app or anything. So then you got to go and you got to refill it, but you don't know how much you've got, and you got to struggle to refill it, and you've got to catch an Uber to a place that can get you money into it. And and I tweeted this, and apparently they are aware of it, and this will be resolved by June of next year, according to the mayor of Cape Town. But it look, I'm an old school person. I always have cash on me, just because my grandfather always said, sometimes there's a deal going down and the man with cash wins the deal. So I do that. Recently, I carry less cash on me. But if I'm at the petrol or a car guard guy or something, I need some cash for him. But aside from that, I just use my phone. I have, you know, these days, if I leave my wallet at home, it's not a train smash, because it is just tap, tap, and I pay everywhere. And it is, I mean, it's epic. And now, I mean, lose my phone and like, yo, but.
So the interesting thing is, being a millennial, right, I kind of lived through the world that you described, where everything was cash and there's this fear to go digital and all of that. But at the same time, you see what the world is today and you see the digital, you embrace that side of it. And I found myself in another country and looking at a transaction. And it was something small. It wasn't anything really significant, but just the convenience that came from it. I was able to, in the space of waiting for, I think we were waiting for coffee or something. Mm-hmm. In that time, I was able to set up a foreign account, move money with my discretionary allowance into the foreign account, into foreign currency, convert at whatever live rate it was, and then have that as a virtual card added to my paywall. I did all of this from my cell phone. While having the coffee, and then paid for the coffee with the virtual card that I just created. It was amazing. And I sat there with my wallet, and I was like, I don't actually need my wallet. I've been able to transact freely at that. And that's the world that we're now moving into. And when you look at countries outside of South Africa, as you said, in South Africa, certain transactions like thanking your car guard do require you to have cash, until we get to a point where the car guards have Yoko machines.
I've seen that too. I've seen that. But that's not seamless enough yet, is just to hand over a 20.
That's it, a 10 rand, a 20 rand, that's it. But when you're in a foreign country, my principle has always been, when traveling, do not find yourself in a position where you don't have liquidity, whether it's cash, whether it's credit, whether however it is.
That's a good point.
Don't be stranded outside of your home country without liquidity. So I get very paranoid about these things. I make sure there's cash, there's physical cash, there's digital cash, all of that stuff is available. But I found myself almost feeling bad for having physical cash, because it just wasn't being used. I mean, there was the option to do it. There was the optionality to, but you can pay in another currency in another country seamlessly. It goes off your account immediately. It's almost effortless that the world we now live in allows for that. And you look at examples like Woolworths that now have cashless tills. We're seeing it now in South Africa, the cashless till environment. And it's almost like the self-service tills as well. I remember when I was in London at some point and I went to a Marks and Spencer's, which is the equivalent of a Woolies, right? They have those self-service things where you can entirely scan your groceries yourself, package them yourself, pay yourself, all of those sorts of things. So the world we've lived in has definitely changed over the last couple of years. But to your point around things like the My City and things like the concerts, I never thought we'd get to this point now. And now, does that make it more dangerous or does that make it better? Because if someone gets into your device, that could be catastrophic.
So surely it's safer because, you know, I mean, for example, to your point, when we were in Europe 2 years ago, first thing I do when I land at the airport is draw a couple of €100. And then, of course, they give me big notes. And I'm like, no, I want little notes. Anyway, just because I'm like you, like maybe I'm going to need some cash at some point. Never used it. My wife got pickpocketed on the subway, as cliched as it can be, on the metro. But anyway, she did. And she had €10 in there. And the most valuable thing in there was actually the purse. That cost like R1,000 because, and a card, which same thing. It was, you know, I just like, well, that's no problem. We blocked that card. We created a virtual card. This is all happening. Weirdly, they sent a new card, which got home before we did. But et cetera, et cetera. You then have to have device security. And I know people who, when they go to shopping malls and stuff, have a cheap phone that doesn't have banking and all of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, sure, I've got a fancy Apple, it's Face ID, but I mean, all you got to do is knock me out, right? I mean, you could punch me, you could slip a drug in my drink or something, and I'm lying unconscious, and they're like, ting, ting, and now you're open. And, you know, I think about my banking app. Again, I need to do face scan to get into it. But if I'm lying there unconscious, and then it's like, well, they can't add a new reference. You can. Again, what's the security? It's my face. Suddenly, there is that single point of failure to my entire net worth.
And I thought I was safe with biometrics because it's my fingerprint. It belongs to me. You can't replicate it. But as you're rightly saying, if I'm knocked out, easiest access to absolutely everything.
Thumb.
That's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely everything can be accessed that way. So contactless, for as much as it is a good thing, and I suppose we're moving forward in that regard, the safety of it, as you said, single point of failure now becomes the problem. But perhaps this is something that we should get the community to weigh in on. I think I appreciate that we all have had different experiences with this. So to our community, is South Africa ready to be cashless? If we're being absolutely realistic about the dangers that come with it, the benefits that come with it, is it something we are ready for? Or do we still feel that cash kontant is the way to go? Because for some people, that's what it is, right? For some people, I know that the 100 rand I'm holding in my hand, or the 100 rand that's sitting in my wallet, will always be the 100 rand that's there. No one's going to hack into it. No one's going to threaten it. No one's going to come in and say, we've stolen your 100 rand, unless, of course, they knock you out, which was going to be a danger anyway.
It's a danger anyway.
So that's going to be the question to our community. We'd love to get your thoughts on that. Please do share that so that we can kind of get a gauge of where everybody sits on the cash versus cashless conversation. But the South African picture is also quite a different one because there's so many more companies that are now going cashless in South Africa. You look at something like Starbucks as well that offer cashless stores in their entirety. How do we then differentiate between what things would be best suited to be cashless versus, say, other things we should just keep as they are? Because I look at South Africa compared to a place like Dubai, and 90% of the, or 90, more than 90% rather, more than 90% of the transactions that take place in the GCC areas, that is the Gulf Corporation countries, are contactless transactions, are cardless transactions, whether it's tap and go, whether it's digital transactions. They have fully embraced that. Granted, they have very strict rules on what happens with theft and et cetera, et cetera. safeguards a lot of this. But should we then be looking to embrace that as well? Should South Africa then be saying, we can adopt contactless? Because just on this last week alone, you and I have both had experiences that have proven that it is possible to adopt and live in this reality for forever.
I don't think we can ever go, not in any hurry, can we go 100% away from cash. They're particularly in our economy, you know, the rural transactions. There are parts of South Africa where there is no Yoko.
The unbanked community.
There's never going to be a Yoko. And some of those folks, I was helping a homeless person one time, and I said to him, do you want cash or money in your card? And I didn't know, and he had an Absa bank account. So he used to say, look, you know, give me some as cash, but put the rest into my Absa account. That was just an Absa ATM type thing. Yeah, there was no tap and pay and stuff like that. So it you can't go 100% because it is exclusionary to some people. And I'm not even, there are homeless people in America. I mean, do they have, fancy phones that are tappable? Now, the banks could say, look, your credit card is, and they could make your ATM card as well. But you are going to lock some people out of the broader system. But kind of happening anyway. The Woolies. Some of their cafes are zero cash. The concert I went to, zero cash. I went to a pub and observatory. There was a band playing on Friday night. And it's observatory. I love OBS, but OBS is not exactly fancy. There was no cash, like no cash whatsoever.
Now, your point around the exclusionary environment of the economy, that all the realities of South Africa, I think that's quite an important point as well, because when you look at some of the transactions, there's still an inherent fear towards the banking side of it, right? I still know people that if you're on a SASSA senior citizens grant, every time the money comes into the account, people withdraw the money in full because I don't want to leave it there because somebody could take it, or the government could take it, or whatever happens there. But you're seeing that kind of fear still exist. The reality is it still exists in many, many South Africans' lives, where you have the money in the account, but because of a variety of different things, it doesn't matter which income bracket you're in, you're at risk. I mean, I think about what the central bank has been doing recently with the seizures of funds where it relates to a breach of exchange control. That is them unilaterally suspending someone's bank account, and that will incite a lot of fear if you say my bank account can just be frozen at a moment's notice and I can't have access to any of that money. That's probably going to push us further away from a digital environment and keep us in a cashed environment, because now if I am a small business owner and I need that cash for cash flow purposes, whether I'm driving a taxi or running this puzzle shop, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, some things are just easier to be done in cash, and I don't have to pay exorbitant fees for the transactions. If I want to transfer a 5 rand or a 10 rand or whatever to someone, I can give them that 5 rand or 10 rand. If I do it digitally, it comes at a cost.
Yeah, because I was about to mention PayShap, which I really, really enjoy. And at this point, lots of it is free, but it's not going to be free forever.
So what happens in a situation like this? Apple Pay shut down in Russia in March 2022 following the country's invasion of Ukraine, right? So now we've all gone cashless, and an Apple Pay or a war happens and someone unilaterally decides, hang on, this service is no longer provided. So clearly, I don't know if the world itself is at a point where everything can be cashless. I think that the adoption of these sorts of transactions is picking up, certainly. But whether or not we'll ever get to that point, as you said, where everything is cashless.
And let's be clear, there's some Russian there who is not a Putin supporter, who also now can't use their Apple Pay.
There we go. Who has absolutely no political affiliations, is being disadvantaged on purely the basis of their nationality. And that's geopolitics, right? That happens anywhere in the world, where you sit there thinking one thing is going to happen and then something else happens. Give us your thoughts, share your opinions with us around the contactless / cardless world. Share your experiences. Maybe you've had a great experience that's made you think this is the way to go. Maybe you've had a horrible experience that made you think I'm going to put all of my money in a mattress. Tell us. We'd love to know. Share those insights and those opinions with us. But until next time, that was our deep dive. And we wrap things up with a look at investor insights. We're taking a look at the potential impact that rate changes can have on your debt. We saw that last week. We got an interest rate decision from the Central Bank of South Africa to reduce interest rates by 25 basis points. The last time they did that, I think Sai worked out that it was about 120 or 150 rand adjustment to your bond. We're going to be taking a look at some of the bigger impacts that these rate cuts can have on you and the decisions that you make. We're also going to be updating our wall. And as we've started this year from 2025, we're going to be throwing in something unexpected at the end of the show, our unfiltered opinion of the week. So stick around for that. Let's start off with the rate changes. Not surprising to see the rate changes come through. We kind of expected the 25 basis points, but the bigger story then becomes, as a South African who's seen the pace of rate hikes versus the pace of rate cuts, how do you then manage your life? Does it have a material impact on your debt? Because it certainly has an impact when the interest rates are going up, but we hardly feel it when the rates come down.
Well, we don't. And that's because I suspect, so to the point, so we've had 0.75% rate cuts. That's around 500 bucks per million rand of home loan. That's not nothing. Look, it's not a slap up. I mean, you go for dinner with your loved one, or you go for dinner and have wine. I mean, it's either or, right? You can't have both. But it is 500 bucks. What I think happens, though, is that we don't sort of recalibrate our budget. And I know I've just said the B word and everyone's like, oh, don't go
in
there.
In the B month even, Simon.
But the money kind of arrives and we just like, hey, you know, rather it doesn't arrive. Less money leaves and we just kind of like, and what I always say to folks, and that was what I was saying towards the end of last year, I'm saying it's not a lot of money, but make a plan for it. Let's say you've got a 2.5 million rand bond, which is a big bond, but not out of the world. You're about 1,200, 1,300 rand a month richer. Sit down and plan what to do with it. Okay, so it's 1,200 rand because it makes the math easy. Why don't we put 400 bucks into the bond to pay that a little faster? Why don't we put 400 bucks into another debt? And why don't we put 400 bucks into candy floss and popcorn? You know, I'm a big fan of, we've got to have some fun in life. Candy floss and popcorn.
I think that's another conversation we're going to have, is a conversation around managing your debt and potentially understanding whether there's value in paying it down, whether there's value in certain debts, what good debt might look like. Because I think
100%.
There's a lot of meat to that conversation. But that's a conversation for another day. That might be a deep dive. It might even be next week's deep dive. We'll see. For this conversation around looking at rate changes, when we get rate hikes come through, the bank is very quick to implement those rate hikes. Effective immediately, rate hike, blah, 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 blah. Then the rate cut comes and the bank says, oh, effective next month.
Really?
We will. No, well, they do the adjustments almost immediately as well. But it almost feels as though they're eager to do the rate increases and less eager to do the rate cuts in some cases. From a debt perspective, should you be then exploring things like fixing your rates? Because that question came up now. Someone looking to buy a home now, right? You know the expectation is that rates are going to come down. Mm-hmm. So it is in your interest to have a variable interest rate, because as that comes down, your repayment rates will also come down there on those big debt items. But at the same time, some people would say, I'd rather fix it at a certain point, be comfortable that I'm okay there. And if the banks are forecasting the rate cycle to come down as well, then they're happy to fix at a higher rate because it means they're locking in revenues at a higher rate. How do you navigate that from a debt perspective?
I haven't had a bond in a while. And when I did have a bond, I would always look at the fixing the rates. And it might have helped in the short term, but the banks aren't in the business of, you know, they got way smarter economists than you and me and everybody else. In other words, what looks good to us is definitely good to them. Now, there is a chance they are wrong somewhere. You know, so what is prime now? 11? What are they going to fix at? 10 and a half for 2 years? I wouldn't take 10 and a half for 2 years because they usually only fix for 2 years. I would take 10 for 2 years, but they're not going to give you 10.
But even at 10, right? So I was thinking about the numbers in a similar fashion to say, if prime is at 11 and a bank offers you, let's say you've got a good credit score and a bank miraculously offers you a prime rate of prime less one. So you start at 10. And you have the option to fix. You're never going to be offered to fix at prime less one. They'll fix perhaps at prime plus one or at prime or at a rate that's always going to be beneficial to them. If you're forecasting that interest rates are going to come down, where is the value in fixing?
Yeah, agreed, 100%. And then there's a better trick, which doesn't help if you're busy negotiating your loan. But if you have a loan, no idea, phone your insurer and ask for a decrease, phone your lender. Now,
can we do that? Can people?
Yes. So the Twitters in January have been full of people phoning. You don't phone because it's 2025. Yes. You email. And a lot of people have said like, no, well, then come back next year. And I think the banks will review only every 6 months. So come back in 6 months. But I mean, I've seen people get 0.1, people get 0.25 cuts on their rates. So whatever their current rate is, now a couple of things, you know, where's the house? What's the value of it? They don't do a check, but they know broadly, you know, if you're in that street that blew up and still hasn't been fixed, you're not getting a cut. But if you're in the Atlantic seaboard, your property's gone up, so maybe. Do you pay extra? Are you in arrears? I mean, those sort of things. Maybe you've had a salary increase. Maybe you've reduced your risk. In other words, if you're a man, you got married. If you're a woman, you got married, that pushes your risk up. No, fun fact, on the wedding day, the woman's life expectancy goes down and the man's goes up because men kill women and women stop men doing stupid things. So you know, contact your bank and say, and you know, it's an email. You just send an email, and mm-hmm. and then if they reject it or if they accept it, find out what their process is. In other words, how frequently can you request this? Because it's just an email, and you know, point one is not a heck of a lot, but it's money in your pocket rather than their pocket.
And the worst they can say to that email is no.
Correct.
They absolutely Correct. Can't give you a worse response than, sorry, we can't do this now. But what you raised is quite an important point around finding out the process. Maybe we should look at that as well. Maybe we should explore what the process is like, because you also need to understand how to make the system work in your favor. The system is not designed to give you all the answers and spoon feed you all the answers, but clearly there's a lot of benefit that can be derived from it. We're going to be taking a look at some picks on the wall. At the start of the show, Sai said he had a very, very, very important pick to add on the wall. Sai, what's going on the wall?
One word, gold. Now, you then said to me, what gold? Mm. That chain around your necklace, stick it on the wall. Gold bars on the wall. G-O-D
gold
on the
nuggets.
Wall.
Anything
gold
that miners. You can find that's yeah. gold.
Gold put nuggets, it on- not chicken nuggets. Gold, stick it on the wall. We are in... really, we've got to say that again? Unprecedented times.
That's true. That's true. I mean, $3,000 an ounce for gold does not seem unrealistic.
100%. Just buy yourself some gold.
You think we should get Mushima back on to give us a projection?
Yes, because you know what she was last time?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
100% right.
That's Mishima.
Over and over.
That's
so
Mishima.
Perhaps that's going to happen. We're going to get her thoughts on that. But gold is going on the wall. We are also going to be revisiting some of the things that we had on the wall. We had made some adjustments to what we'd put on the wall in terms of local versus offshore. I know we had, in terms of our local picks, we'd had the likes of Sasol moving up out of some really scary territory off the back of some positive restatements by Morgan Stanley. They didn't end the month off too well, but we did move them around as well. I'm having a look at the wall at the moment, and I'm seeing the likes of Spa that we kind of still have a very neutral stance on. Telkom, we're still waiting to see surprises happen there. Advitech, we had a bit of a concern.
Why didn't you like
Advitech? No, we liked Advitech, but we also looked at the space they were sitting in and looked at the competitors and looked at other factors. But we did like Advitech. I think we just... potentially didn't like them enough to say that we'd put them higher up on the wall at the time. I think we were still waiting on a couple of things from their perspective. I look at multi-choice. That still, for me, doesn't seem like something we want to be near because we don't know what's happening with the Canal Plus deal. We're adding gold to the wall. We're going to add some gold counters. We do have gold counters on the wall, don't we? I'm sure
we
do.
We surely do.
We surely do. We've got the PGMs on there. We have Sibanye on there. Diversified Miner kind of covers a bit of the gold space. Northern, you had Anglo Gold Ashanti. I remember you were a big fan of Anglo Gold Ashanti as well.
So I erroneously sold some of my pans, in fact all my pans.
We had DRD Gold under alternative, sorry. Do we leave them under alternative? Do we move them out now? Is this a good time to say DRD Gold could perform well because they have to do very little to make more money now?
Correct.
So we're moving DRD Gold.
Their only risk is inflation.
But even then, if your gold price is moving up at a rate faster than inflation is growing, and
it's no worries,
and the central bank is trying to get inflation to 2.5%, then really there's no worry. For the first time in South Africa's history, I think, inflation rate sitting below 3% or around the 3% level is a benefit for these guys. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and load shedding helps them as well.
Yeah, so it looks like we're bullish on everything that has to do with gold. How are we feeling about the Trump trade? Can we put things on the wall for the Trump trade? I look at you and it looks like I've just stressed you out for the next 6 weeks.
What was so the Trump trade was crypto. That's had its day in the sun.
Yeah.
It was Tesla. That's had its day in the sun. It looks like Trump is like Trump to trade 2 weeks into his presidency. The Trump trade was from November through to
January.
And then it's the Trump trade is now short stupidity.
Short stupidity, long gold. That is the Trump trade. I think that's quite an interesting trade. I think it'll play out quite interestingly in the markets. And we'll have to come back and look at how it affects the likes of BlackRock that we have on our international wall, the likes of Kering from a luxury perspective, the likes of the S&P. But that's going to be a conversation for another day. We're going to leave the wall there. If there are any suggestions that you have that you'd want us to take a look at, things you'd want us to add to the wall, to review, we're more than happy to do that. Just drop them in our comments, drop them in our DMs. We'll take a look at them. We'll share our thoughts on them. We'll definitely want to get your thoughts on them as well. And we'll see where they end up on the wall. But we're going to leave the show, as we have been, with our unfiltered opinion of the week. Now, I don't know what the unfiltered opinion of the week is going to be. This week's unfiltered opinion is courtesy of something that Sai's been cooking up. And I'm eagerly awaiting to hear what this unfiltered opinion is. What is it?
If you voted for Trump, you're stupid. There's nothing he's doing that he didn't promise to do. How did you vote for Trump? Maybe you're not stupid. Maybe you're just full of hate.
Then. That's the unfiltered opinion of the week. We're going to leave the conversation there. Like, subscribe, follow, share, do all of those things. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.